Chicken quiche with cremini mushrooms, baby spinach, and feta cheese.
Unbelievable. Bodra, I have a huge problem with this dish. It's that you haven't made it for me sooner.
Thank you, Chef.
Because if you had, Drew, then I would know how good you are at cooking food that's bad.
I'm sorry, Chef.
And when I say bad, I mean Michael Jackson bad.
Thank you, Chef.
You know how he looked really, really bad at the end of his life?
Chef, I'm sorry. I don't know if you like the dish or not.
You don't know if I like the dish or not? Well, let's put it this way. Pack your knives, get out, you're off the show.
Sorry, Chef.
Because you should be working in the finest restaurants in the world.
Thank you, Chef.
Just not any world that I live in.
Grab your notes. The point of it is, it's very difficult in life when you don't feel good enough. When you face something and you wonder, am I going to be good enough? All through our lives, we go through it. You go out for Little League, you wonder, am I going to be good enough to make the team? Am I going to be good enough to be a starter? You try out for cheerleader, am I going to get picked? Am I good enough? And you get into school and you wonder, are my grades going to be good enough? And you ask somebody out, let's go hang out, and you wonder, am I good enough? Are they going to pick me? You apply for a college, am I good enough? Am I going to get accepted? You finally go and you try to get the job. You put the application in and you wait for the call back, wondering, am I good enough to be hired? You get the job and you wonder, am I good enough to be promoted? I mean, we just constantly face, it's like it dogs us, am I good enough? And there's the big question, am I good enough to go to heaven? Am I good enough to be with God? I remember years ago, I was with my two sons. We went to a water park. And we're getting ready to go down one of those big water slides, and this gang of little kids comes up, all these boys, and they're going to go down this slide, and there's this one boy that's not tall enough. All the rest of them get to go down the slide, but there's this one guy, and they bring him over, and they put him underneath the hash mark, and he's not tall enough. He doesn't measure up. And I remember seeing his face. Everybody else goes ripping down the slide, and he has to walk back, and he's by himself. And, you know, do I measure up? You know? And it's the big idea this weekend, writing your notes, how good is good enough? We're taking on the heavyweight questions. This is the last week, and it's a heavyweight question that we face in life. How good is good enough? How good do I have to be? And now for some people, they kind of fall to this philosophy when it comes to God and heaven, that it's the good people that go to heaven. Just write that in your notes. Good people go to heaven. It's a philosophy. A lot of people think that. God is good, and so heaven is a good place, and so obviously it's filled with good people. So it's the good people that go to heaven. You know, it's the good people that have good things happen in their life, which I'm not necessarily trying to crack that, because I understand the logic of it. Here's some things about it, why people think it's fair. I mean, you think it's fair. I mean, you know, if you're good, good things are going to happen. Where I work at with lots of salesmen, they talk about karma. It seems like everybody believes in karma. It's like, if I do something good, then something good's going to come back to me. And someone will say, nah, I'm not going to do that. If I do something bad, it'll just come back to me. Because, you know, think about when you parent. You raise your children up, and when they do good things, they get good things. And then when they do something wrong or bad, then they get a consequence. You know, we kind of grow up that way. Do you know 86% of the people in the United States believe in heaven? 86% of the people that believe in heaven believe they're good enough to go. And so one of the things is, when you think about, well, all good people go to heaven, you're just like, you know, you think, well, I'm, you know, you get to decide, I'm good enough to go to heaven. Now, here's why a lot of people, here's why I, you know, you think, well, you're good enough to go, is because there's always somebody in our family, a cousin or somebody, that makes me look pretty good. And so I'm good enough because my cousin, you know, it's like, some of you should probably write a thank you note this week to somebody. I just want to thank you for who you are, because who you are means I'm good enough. Or turn to the person next to you and thank them. Say, I want to thank you. You make it easy for me to be good enough. It's like, you know, it's like, because, you know, when it comes to good enough, you know, am I good enough? It's like a fair system, you know. It's fair. Heaven's a good place and God's a good God. And so the whole idea is just make sure you're good enough. That's fair. And then the second thing is it's motivating. Really super motivating, because if I'm really, really good, I'm going to get to go to heaven, or if I do good things are going to happen for me. You know, it seems logical. The philosophy is good people go to heaven, good things happen, good people get to be with God. If you're really super good, then whatever you face in life, you'll be able to handle. The whole goal is to be good. And it seems motivating. I'm like, really, really try super, super hard, because if I'm good, I get to be with God, I get to go to heaven, I'll be able to handle things that happen in my life, which, you know, I understand that. I mean, when you think about something being motivating, I mean, there's a lot of motivation to want to be able to get to go to heaven someday and get to be with God. And so, you know, there's a lot of motivation in it. You know, how many times do the kids are in the back seat when they're little and they're fighting and screaming and everything, and you say, listen, if you guys would just shut up, I'll get you a Happy Meal. Shh, quiet. Now, you do know that McDonald's did not name Happy Meals for the kids. They named them Happy Meals because they make parents happy. You pull in there, you give the Happy Meal to them, shh, nice and quiet. But again, you have to think, it's like a reward, motivating. If you're good, then good things will happen for you. And motivating, motivates people. And then this last one, it seems to match the teachings of Jesus. So you think, hey, it's a fair way for everybody, and it's very motivating. We're all going to try super, super hard to be good. And Jesus is good, right? I mean, heaven's a good place, so good people are going to be there. I mean, isn't it Jesus' job to make us good? So when you think about it, the idea is to be good. I mean, the goal in life is to be good. I mean, maybe you know somebody and you've talked to them about God, and they say, listen, I just think, you know, I'm a good person. And I try to be good and treat other people good. And I just believe that that's what God wants the most is, you know, God just wants us all to be good. And you get it. It's fair. It's motivating. It seems to be just like Jesus. But there are some flaws. Let me talk about them for a second. Flaw number one, what's the clear standard? You know, how do we know what good enough looks like? I mean, who gets to set the universal standard on what good enough is? I've been amazed over the last few years how just this one, let me give you an example, one little topic of food. I mean, you know, it's like nowadays there's no such thing as a good food. No matter what you eat, there's something wrong with it. I mean, there's some study that's been done. One group says this is the food you should be eating. This is good food. Eat this food. And another study says, oh, you'll be dead in 30 minutes if you eat that food. That's bad food. You know, who gets to set the standard? It's just a simple thing like food nowadays. What is good look like? Here's an exaggerated example, but I want you to see it. Check this out right here.
Hey guys.
Hello.
Hi, hello.
My name is Dana. I'll be taking care of you today. If you have any questions about the menu, please let me know.
I guess I do have a question about the chicken, if you could just tell us a little bit more about it.
The chicken is a heritage breed, woodland-raised chicken that's been fed a diet of sheep's milk, soy, and hazelnuts.
Okay, this is local?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm gonna ask you just one more time, and it's local?
It is.
Is that USDA organic, or Oregon organic, or Portland organic?
It's just all across the board, organic.
Hazelnuts, these are local?
How big is the area where the chickens are able to roam free?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have exactly the same question.
4 acres. Mm-hmm. Give me just a second. I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
Great. This is nice.
We're doing the right thing.
I'm too apologetic.
You're you are.
Oh, right. So here is the chicken you'll be enjoying tonight.
You have this information. This is fantastic.
Absolutely. His name was Colin. Here are his papers, okay?
That's great.
He looks like a happy little guy who runs around.
A lot of friends, other chickens as friends. Putting his little wing around another one and kind of like palling around.
I don't know that I can speak to that level of intimate knowledge about him.
But I mean, if you think about it, I mean, when I was a kid, you know, broccoli was good and Twinkies was bad. But not anymore. I mean, now broccoli has to be purchased in the organic section. You have to have one of those little yellow baggies to put it in. You can't have a clear baggie anymore, and you got to get it over at Whole Paycheck or Whole Foods. I mean, you can't get it at a normal store like Smith's. You got to go to a good store where they have good broccoli. And it is so embarrassing to be the guy in the produce section, and you pass somebody by, and they kind of look at you, and you realize all their bags are yellow. And you have clear bags because you didn't get your broccoli over for $75 a stalk. Because that's the good broccoli. Okay. Now here's my point. Who gets to decide what a good parent is? Or a good daughter? Who gets to decide what a good son looks like, or a good boss, or a good employee? What does a good husband really look like? How do you know if you're a good wife? What's the universal standard that you can confidently say, if I hit that mark, nobody can stop me from going down the slide. If I can be that person, nobody can argue with me. I'm good enough. How do we find that? Or is it true that there is no clear standard? There's a real flaw with the idea that it's all about being good. Because you can chase good for the rest of your life and never be sure if you're good enough. It happens in marriage all the time. You just say, you go into marriage and you find out, well, we have two different ideas of what good is. You know, you go into work and you have two different ideas of what good is. And all of a sudden you realize that what one person thinks is good isn't what you think is good. And maybe you've thought this before, well, I'm going to decide what good is. Well, I'll try that in marriage. That won't work so good. And I'll decide. How do you know what good is? Well, good's whatever I say. I'm in a graduate program, fourth year in it, and my project is families in Salt Lake City. So I write this huge paper, 50 pages. I have to submit it to this professor. You got to pass it to keep going in the program. And I worked hard. I took 3 days off work. I didn't consume any alcohol for 2 weeks, not a drop. I mean, nothing. I mean, I really focused up on this paper. I get books everywhere, shut my door, no TV, nothing. And I got done with that paper and I thought, you know what? I think this might be the best paper I have written in the entire program. This paper's good. And I fired off to the professor and I'm just waiting for my glorious moment when the grade comes back, because that is a good paper. Well, I'm still shocked. The professor fires the paper back and he says, it's not quite good enough. And he has the audacity to suggest a rewrite to make it better. My first thought was, I'm rewriting this paper. This paper's good enough. And then I remembered, oh, that's right. I don't give the grades out. Have you ever had that occur? You work your ass off all day long and your boss says, not good enough. You give a fantastic presentation, and the survey comes in and says, not good enough. I had this one friend at work, and he told me this interesting story. He said one day he worked up on the house. He was a teenager. His dad was gone for work. He spent the whole day up on the house helping re-roof this house and tore all the shingles off and loaded all these new ones up there. And he mowed the backyard. I mean, from morning to night, this kid had worked constantly. And when his dad gets home, he's just waiting for his dad to get home to see all this work that he's done. And when his dad got home, the first thing he said to him is, why is your bicycle in the driveway? And he's like, what? See, there is a problem. There's a flaw with the philosophy that says good people go to heaven, good people can go to God. Good people can handle everything that's coming towards them. Good people sends out good vibes that come back good. There's a real flaw with that, and it's this. Who decides what's good? Even little things like, you know, a week ago, my wife and I decided we're going on a date. Now, when you're in marriage, you have different ideas of what's a good date, what's a bad date. And so it starts out great because we went to this restaurant and we both thought the restaurant was good. It was a hot dog shop, a good restaurant. So anyways, we go there, we get hot dogs. And then afterwards, my wife wants to go shopping for furniture. Now, her idea of a good date is to go to the furniture store and look at all this furniture, you know, that we're never going to buy. And, you know, and to look at all the furniture and spend the night looking at the furniture, that's a good date for her. Now, for me, to go look at a bunch of furniture is a good way to ruin a date. Because I go home and I see all my crappy furniture and I'm depressed at the end of the night. That's not a good date for me. But for my wife, Clarice, that's a good date. So someone please try to convince her that it isn't. But I'm just saying, even in just a simple thing like going out on a date, who gets to decide what's good enough? Do you see the flaw? Now the second thing is, who gets to set the standard? You know, where do I stand? And I want to read you something here. Because way back in Jesus' day, people still wanted to know, where do I stand on the level of goodness? Am I good enough? Where do I stand? Now, a man came up to Jesus and asked, "Teacher, what good thing must I do to get eternal life?" He wants to know from Jesus, how good do I have to be? There's a billionaire in Utah that died, and before he died, he had a disease that really started to escalate and it caught up with him. It came on very, very quickly. And I knew this guy that was an insider in his life, and he told me this story. He said, you know, as it became apparent that even though he had all this money, this is billionaire, not a millionaire, billionaire, had all this money, that his money was not going to keep him alive. And so he goes to a church. And he gets the leaders of the church together. And this is a guy who just put everything off in his life, did what he was going to do. And he's at the very end of his life. They tell him 2 months to live. He goes to the church. He goes to the leaders of the church. He says, listen, how much do I have to be, just tell me, how much money do I have to donate to be good enough to get into heaven? And to their credit, they said, that's not something you can buy. That's not for sale. There's no amount of money that you could give us right now and we could say, you're good enough. We all want to know where we stand. Where do I stand in all this thing? Am I going to make it? You know, who gets to set the standard? And am I reaching it? They came to Jesus and said, Jesus, what's the standard? Where do I stand right now? Where am I proportioned? This billionaire gets to the end of his life and he looks over at the pile of bad stuff and it's pretty big. And he looks over at the pile of good stuff and it's pretty small. He's like, oh, I'm in trouble. I don't have enough goodness. Can you imagine if you got to heaven and you went up to the pearly gates? And you get there and there's an angel bouncer there. You know, we've got to see if he'll let you in. He's like, well, of course, I've been a really good person. Okay, hang on a second, let me see here. Your name again? Yeah, Robin. Okay, that's it. No, don't see a Robin on there. Whoa, what are you talking about? I was really good. Well, I'm taking a look here and it doesn't, nope, you're definitely not on there. Wait a second, what do you mean I'm not on there? I don't get to go in? No, well, how come? Well, you weren't good enough. Wait a second, I was really super good. I bought Girl Scout cookies every time. What are you talking about? I'm not good enough. How could I not be good enough? Like, what kind of goodness did I have to have? And the bouncer says, well, the kind of goodness you didn't have. And then you look over his shoulder and you see your neighbor in there, who your entire life you felt better than your neighbor. You're like, wait a second, what's that dude doing in there? He's not as good as me. What's he doing in there? He says, well, he's on the list. You're not. Wait a minute. I'm gooder than him. What kind of goodness does he have that I don't have? That's how this billionaire must have felt, though. It's a silly story, but he must have felt that way. And you know what? Whenever you and I operate on that philosophy, well, it's goodness that matters. We'll be right there. We'll constantly be looking at the big pile of bad and constantly trying to make the good pile big enough. And we want the scale somehow, please, 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 to be with God. Please, to go to heaven. Please, if I'm just really, really good, no matter what happens, send out good thoughts, send out good thoughts. I'll be able to make it through life. If I just am good enough, I'll always feel good enough. Newsflash. There'll always be something too big. There'll always be a challenge that will scare you. There'll always be something that'll cause anxiety. And when you rear back and you say, well, wait a minute now, I'm good enough to handle that, your pile will always at some point be too small. Now here's the third thing, and this is amazing because the philosophy says, well, you know, that's like the teachings of Jesus, but actually it's the opposite. This is the real kicker, the flaw in the whole thing. It's the opposite of what Jesus taught. He didn't teach that at all. In his day, there was a ginormous church, the Jewish church, where everybody dressed the same way, everybody looked the same way, they ate the same food. And when you're in that church, the goal was, see, what everybody believed is that if I'm really super religious, then I'll be good enough. And so they focused on that, and people would rise up through this church, sometimes because of their families or whatever the case may be, and they were the really super religious ones. They were like way religious, and everybody looked at them and said, man, now that, I mean, that's what good is right there, which caused a lot of people to just throw in the towel. I'll never be that good. I'm out. But that's what's good. And Jesus comes, and he starts spending time with just normal people, regular people. He's going to their parties and hanging out at their houses, and he's just being with people, and he turns the whole thing upside on their head. These real like religious bigwigs, they're the good ones. They were called Pharisees. Listen to what Jesus says about good. But I warn you, unless your righteousness is better than the righteousness of the teachers of the religious law and the Pharisees, circle that, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Jesus says, be careful. Don't make it about goodness. That's not going to work. There's this amazing story. I hope you got the communion elements in your chair. We're going to close the service with communion, which is the sacrament that happened right before Jesus went to the cross. And there's this amazing story of Jesus having a conversation with two people that were also being crucified on the cross. There was three crosses that day. And they put the crosses up on a hill where everybody could see them. The custom of the day that the Romans used to intimidate and scare people is they would go into a country with a force, with an army, and wipe everybody out, and then they would just leave a small amount behind. And that small amount would rule with an iron fist. And they would rule by fear. There was enough people there left that could wipe out the army, but they were too scared. They saw what the big army did. And secondly, they saw crucifixions. They're very famous in Jesus' day. Jesus was one of thousands of people that had been crucified. They invented crucifixions, and it was a public way to humiliate the people that were dying on the cross in a painful way that scared everyone. So they would put them up on a hill, and they would nail them to a cross, and they would want all the people to know this: if you don't obey the Romans, you'll be up there too. It was the crucifixion. And so there's three people crucified that day, and two of them are criminals. They're thieves. And then there's Jesus. And they must have been pretty bad thieves, because they're thinking, wow, Jesus is going to draw a huge, super big crowd, and we want these guys to really be super punished, so we'll put them up there too, so everybody will see them, and they'll be embarrassed too. And so there's Jesus on the day he's crucified, thief on his right, thief on his left, Jesus in the middle, and he's talking to them. That's the scene. Jesus is discussing the issue of goodness. Now, I want to read it to you. This is Jesus talking on the cross. Some's in your notes, some will be behind me. When they came to the place called the skull, they nailed him to the cross. And the criminals were also crucified, one on his right, one on his left. Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. And the soldiers gambled for his clothes by throwing dice. The crowd watched, and the leaders scoffed. He saved others, they said. Let him save himself if he's really God's Messiah, the chosen one. The soldiers mocked him too by offering him a drink of sour wine. They called out to him, if you're the king of the Jews, save yourself. A sign was fastened to the cross above him with these words, this is the king of the Jews? One of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed, so you're the Messiah, are you? Prove it by saving yourself and us too while you're at it. But the other criminal protested, don't you fear God? Even when you've been sentenced to die, we deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus replied, I assure you, today you'll be with me in paradise. There's a conversation happening. Now think about it. There's no more time for these guys. They're not like the billionaire where they even have two more months, like, well, maybe I can do something. They're done now. There's no more time to weigh out the scales. You know, as you get older, you face that. Maybe you know some people, and they're getting older and older, and in their mind, they're thinking, someday I'm going to have to go back to church, I'm going to have to deal with this thing, I'm going to have to go back to God, and they put it off, and they're getting older and older. It's like they just keep thinking, someday, someday, someday. There's some days here now, and there's no opportunity at all for them to be better or good. That's over now. And Jesus is discussing something with them. One criminal yells out, hey, this isn't fair. If you're such a good God, do something good. But the other man, he's very different. Somehow he gets it. He goes, I know it's not about goodness now. It's going to be about whatever you decide, Jesus. Please remember me. In a sense, he was saying, do you care about me? And in this moment, Jesus makes a huge shift in everything. And he says, being with God and going to heaven isn't about being good. Being with God and going to heaven is about being forgiven. It's not going to be the good people that are in heaven. It'll be the forgiven people. It's not going to be the good people that have a relationship with God. It's going to be the forgiven people. It's not going to be the good people that can look into their future and say, I'm good enough. I'm going to make it. I'm not going to get pounded. It's going to be the forgiven people. And write in your notes here what that means. Forgiven people go to heaven. And everyone is welcome. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And everyone who calls on the name of the Lord. So in that moment when you're facing something that's scaring you and the anxiety's coming up, if you try to determine if you're good enough, it won't work. But if at that moment, like the thief on the cross, you decide, I'm calling upon the Lord. Anybody that gets afraid. My sister had panic attacks. She used to wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, absolutely scared to death. We were raised in a home where drug addiction and alcoholism, and it was a scary place to grow up. And she sort of sailed over the top of it, and then she got older one day and she couldn't figure out what the heck is going on. She had just sort of stashed it all. And one day there was no more room. It's like a garbage can. You keep putting your foot in there and stomping and stomping and stomping, and pretty soon there's no more room. And up came the fear. It would wake her up at night. She'd call me. And we talked about it. And you know what? She had every reason to believe she was good enough. She had this great job as an executive. She made a lot of money. She had a gorgeous house. I mean, she's pretty. She looks like me, not playing. But I mean, this was a woman that should have been able to say, whoa, hold up, man. I'm good enough. And we talked about it, and I said, no, that's not going to work, girl. You're going to have to call upon the Lord. He's the only one that's going to be big enough now. When you're afraid and you have a lot of anxiety, you can't go forward. You're going to find out if you call upon the Lord. He'll say to you, I'll remember you. Don't worry, you'll be with me. Everyone is welcome. Everyone can be forgiven. Why forgiveness? Because when I'm forgiven, I really believe that God's with me. It's my shame and my guilt that causes me to question that. But when I'm forgiven, I can really stand with a clean slate and say, I know God's with me. There's a legend about a family in Spain, father, son, and they get in this huge, ginormous fight. And the son runs off. It's a big, in Rome, huge city. Son runs off, completely angry, both angry at each other. Get out, I ain't leaving you, you know, runs off. A few hours go by, the dad's like, you'll be back, you know, doesn't show up. The whole night doesn't come back. Next day, dad gets up, goes in his room, looks, he's not there. He's like, hey, he's not staying with him, doesn't come back the whole day. Day two, day three, day four. Now the father's going crazy. Where's my son? Why did I say that? What, you know? And week turns into 2 weeks. Police, everybody can't find him. The son had run off to a completely different area of Rome. He's with some friends. He starts to decide he doesn't want me back. He doesn't care about me anyways. And, you know, I never could measure up to his ideas. You know, and he starts to try to build a life there. And now a month has gone by. And the dad's like, what? And so a friend tells him, take a full page newspaper ad out and tell your son that you want him. And the kid's name was Poco, and so really kind of a familiar and common name, P-O-C-C-O, Poco. And the dad takes out, he does it, full newspaper ad. And it says, my son Poco, all is forgiven. I love you, Dad. And at the very bottom, it lists the Cathedral of Genoa. If you read this, please meet me tomorrow at 10 a.m. at the Cathedral of Genoa. The next day, Dad, he's up early the next day, gets ready and everything. And the son saw it. And he's like, wow, I never thought he'd go that far. And he shows up at the cathedral, and there's the dad. And they run and they embrace, and there's this amazing scene. It's like, I didn't mean to say it, and I want you so much. And it's like this great story. But then there's this side story. And that's that there was almost 100 people, 100 named Poco that had showed up when they saw the newspaper ad. See, the deepest thing in me seems like it's that I want to be good so you'll like me and I'll be able to handle stuff. But listen, the deepest thing in us is our desire to be forgiven. That's the deepest thing. Now, look at your notes. I want to read you a couple things. Everybody can meet the requirement. And let me read you two things there. Jesus told him, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. And then, for God so loved the world so much, he gave his one and only Son, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life. Everybody can meet the requirement. Nobody comes up to the hash mark and finds out they're not tall enough. And that's one of the reasons at Eastlake we call this a church for everyone, because everyone can be forgiven of anything. Now listen to me, I want you to catch this, so all eyes up here. I want you to hear something. Your life can be defined by the sins that you've done, the wrong things that you've done. That can define your whole life. You can see your entire life backwards and forwards and who you are on the basis of the wrong things that you have done. Or your entire life can be defined by the wrong things that have been done to you. The sins that people have done to you. You can see back and forward, and everything about you can be about the wrong things that were done to me. Or number three, you can see all of that and you can call out to the Lord and say, God, I am so sick of all of it. I am sick of being afraid. I'm sick of feeling guilty. I'm sick of being bitter towards them. All of it, God. Every bit of it. I just want forgiveness. That can define your life. Because here's the bottom line. The problem is sin and the answer is Jesus. But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners. And since we've been right with God's sight by the blood of Christ, he will certainly save us from God's condemnation. So grab your connection cards for a second and look on the back. The big idea today is that there is a philosophy out there that says, it's the good people that go to heaven, it's the good people that get to be with God, it's the good people that can handle everything that happens in their life, and it seems fair, and it seems like it's going to motivate us, and it seems like it's going to get us into heaven, but there's a lot of flaws in it, because who gets to set the universal standard for good? We can't even do that when it comes to what type of food is okay to eat. Who gets to set it? And where do I stand? How do I ever know if I'm good enough? And it doesn't have anything to do with Jesus. Jesus didn't say good people go to heaven. He said forgiven people go to heaven. Forgiven people go to heaven.